Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force, Quixotic Quests of the Force. We changed the entire concept, and now the entire episode is going to be about things we are trying very hard to do that probably won't work out. I meant this to be funny and it got depressing. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm kidding. Like, I'm not depressed. That made me laugh.
Good, good. We can laugh. We all have quixotic quests from time to time. Consult your doctor if you have one. Anyway, this is Cues of the Force, Questions of the Force, Q&A. We get questions from you all and we try to share our answers, but there are even more A's than just answers. There's also, hey, Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles and growing to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend The Princess and the Scoundrel by Beth Revis, just because I really like that book. And maybe I should change this recommendation, but I want everyone to hear this book. To download your free audiobook, you can go to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. But that is not our only A. We also have an ask, Ken.
We do have an ask. We'd like to ask for you all out there to consider checking out our Patreon page, patreon.com/4center. We, because of you out there, have reached so many wonderful goals lately, including that live Star Wars rank that was exclusive for patrons. And we're going to do that again if you help us reach a goal of $2,200 a month to help make that happen. It's fun to hang out with all of you, do that, then release that to the public later. One of the examples of things you made happen, of course, is Jedi Beat, the YouTube edition. Jennifer Land had taken some of her older episodes. And we thought initially, you mentioned this on the news show, Joseph, just slap some pictures on it. But that was never going to be the case. Jennifer, being the talented journalist that she is, and as she says, a perfectionist, has almost redone all these episodes, and they begin running. It's a 5-week run, Monday, July 17th. We're really excited about that. And that's all happening because of you and your support at patreon.com/4center. So there you go. That's our ask.
That is a beautiful ask. Well delivered, Ken. I don't think there's an in A for this. Oh, hey, announcement. It's a small announcement. Anyway, speaking of Q&As, we are getting back onto YouTube and doing a live Q&A this Friday. If you're listening as the episode comes out, that is Friday, June 30th at 4 p.m. Pacific. We're going to have a hangout. We will take your questions. We will probably have a little sip of something. And we'll be talking Star Wars. And of course, this is opening weekend for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So I'm sure we'll be, if we're talking spoilers, we'll be clear about that. Maybe we'll steer away from spoilers, but we can have some indie fun there as well. So if you want to join us on YouTube, put that in your calendars. Anything I'm forgetting about that one, Ken?
No, other than I think I need to refresh my rum choices. So we'll see what's going to happen.
Excellent. I got some Indiana Jones action figures I can share too. Everybody wants to see the weird monkey peering out behind Marion Ravenwood's wedding dress in this retro figure. The weirdest choice. I love it. Anyway, we're going to get on to the titular queue, the questions. We've got two from patrons on Patreon. We have one from listeners on Twitter. And, of course, we have a Power of the Light Side segment. So let's dig in. Our first question comes to us from patron Ben Potter. Here is what Ben has to say. I'd like to talk Star Wars names. I feel like Star Wars character names have a different vibe than Star Trek names or other sci-fi names. What do you think makes a name in Star Wars good? What are some obscure favorites? I also think you can tell 95% of the time if a Star Wars character is good or bad by hearing their names. Are there any names that made you think a character would be good and they turned out bad, or vice versa? Thanks for all your lovely work. This is a great question, multi-questions, kind of the nesting doll of questions about Star Wars names, with lots of mini questions in there. So, Ken, I want to start just general and talking about Star Wars names in general, and then we'll be sure to dial down and get to Ben's individual name questions as well. But big picture, do you think Star Wars character names are different than other sci-fi names, and for yourself, how are they different?
Yeah, I think they are very different, and they are on a level I think they surpass, but they're in terms of pop culture and their relevance, whether the memes, jokes, just knowledge, people who aren't even fans who know, oh, that's a Star Wars name. It's similar to like Bond girl names, which aren't haven't always been the best, I'll say, but they're memorable, and better or worse, they're memorable. They're in that category for me. It doesn't say other, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, those are some of the Game of Thrones have, George R. R. Martin's picked five names and just spells them differently for all the characters. Like, they all have their special place, but Star Wars names, man, they're top of the list just for the Luke Skywalker of it all. It starts there and just gets better.
Yeah. What to you, I really agree. What to you is special about Luke Skywalker? How does Luke Skywalker start it all for you?
It is like a good band name. And this is, the Simpsons definitely cover this in the B-Sharps episode, which now is probably, who knows, 30 years ago, which is crazy to think. But them trying to name the band, and it's like, it's got to be this and that, and you kind of laugh at it until you take it seriously type of vibe. But B-Sharps, ha ha ha. Oh, yeah, that's the name. I think that's how Star Wars names work, where you look at it and you kind of almost roll your eyes like, oh, I get it. Skywalker, Han Solo, we get it. And then you just can't move off of it. It just takes on its own meaning. And I think that's why, Luke Starkiller would not have been right. It just wouldn't have been right.
No, it would have been too aggressive. Yeah. That's like the Mad Max version of Star Wars.
Yeah. So that's right. That's why I think it kind of starts there. And that's kind of the vibe for names. Star Wars.
Yeah. I think for me, the names are powerful because and different because mm-hmm. they are so based in fantasy and myth. Mm-hmm. Star Trek to me is often based in realism. Star Trek is almost more of a what if. This mm-hmm. could be our future. We could go out to the star, you know, Earth could unite and solve a lot of Earth's problems, and then we could go out and meet other civilizations. And you get into fantasy and you get into lots of alien names, but even, you know, a lot of the alien names from Star Trek, you know, Klingon seems like high fantasy because we've lived with it forever, but it, you know, it's not that absurd or out there. And
right.
then as you get into, you know, Star Trek that really wants to be dealing with more realistic issues like Deep Space Nine, you know, these characters were introduced to Next Generation, but Cardassian and Bajoran and like, you know, if somebody told you like, hey, there's a huge missing part of your history, you've never heard of the Bajoran culture, I wouldn't be like, what's that wacky sci-fi name? I'd believe that was a real people on Earth, you know?
Yes. Like, oh, I'll watch the YouTube history video on that. Hold on. Give me a second.
Yeah. Yeah. But if people are like, you never heard of the Twi'leks? And like, you know, so I think that other things have realism or mm-hmm. Lord mm-hmm. of the Rings or Game of Thrones. It's like that too, right? Of it kind of want, even though it's fantasy, it wants to follow sort of rules of real world naming conventions. In the way they're structured and passed down and house of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You just got weird vowels in places, you know, that's about it.
Yep. Yep. You change a vowel here and there, but Star Wars is based in fantasy. They are names that sound like they should be found not in real world Earth, but in an epic poem from the 11th century or a Brothers Grimm story or ancient hieroglyphics. They are pulled not as much from real human Earth in vibe as they are from real stories of human Earth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes them feel more fantastic. I think that's the, you know, starting with Star Wars with names that tell you exactly who the characters are. Luke mm-hmm. Skywalker and Han Solo are names that are explicit because it's meant to be a learning story. And you want people to have no doubt of where they are. And then I think that happens with the bad guys too, of let's use sounds that have been associated with, you know, aggression, you know, and I think it totally makes sense to me that Lucas went with Starkiller because as we've talked about pulps a lot, particularly when we've been talking about Indiana Jones, you know, there's this intermixing in Star Wars between fantasy and pulp can have that darker edge. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can see Lucas, you know, kind of pulling back and forth between fantasy and pulp, and Starkiller is a pulp name Skywalker is a fantasy name. And I think it made sense that he went more to the fantasy and is, to your point, more to what fits the character.
Yeah. 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 And you know, like I said, Starkiller base, Starkiller, the character. Yeah, it definitely works. It fits in Star Wars, but yeah, you look at Mark Hamill's face. That's not a Starkiller.
That's not a Starkiller. That's a Skywalker. He's meant to walk in those stars. This is in relation to Ben's question, but is just a little bit tackling the name thing. Cause strangely, out of all of our years of broadcasting, we've talked about individual names mm-hmm. or silly names. We haven't really talked about the big picture umbrella of names as much. We've never had a ranked of the best names to my recollection.
I think so.
But I think I love making those jokes, and there are certain things that have a rhythm that sounds like that printer name sounds like a droid from Star Wars, or, you know, that cheese, like, you know, Welsh rarebit, that old dish. That definitely sounds like some shifty mechanic.
Yeah.
We all make those jokes. But the thing I want to spend a minute on, Ken, is I actually do think there are many different kinds of Star Wars names.
Yes.
And they all have their sort of their power and their baggage. Mm-hmm. Do you mind spending a few minutes on this? Is this okay?
No, I love it. And we'll get into a little bit of some of even my choices today. But yes, you hear, oh, Star Wars name, you immediately go to what you're talking about, or, you know, the villain's going to be Twirly McMustache. And you just kind of, you think that's Star Wars names. And again, Skywalker, I think it goes to that. But that's not necessarily true. There's so many different kinds of Star Wars names.
Yeah, and the ones we spend time kind of poking fun at are the ones that just like take a known human name and just, you know, turn it around like they've done for some of the artists, you know, in Star Wars and things like that, or just, you know, make two noises, bonk, donkle, good. Okay, that's a Star Wars name, you know, and that's
please make that a name. Bonk,
it's bonk. So fun, you know. But that's like a specific kind of Star Wars character.
Yes.
That you're never going to be like, and the fate of the Jedi rests in the hands of Bonk Donkle Good. No. The main character names have a power because they're always shorter, punchy, and have a musicality to them. There's a rhythm to saying them. Even though they're based in fantasy and they sound mythic, they also sound relatable and real. Luke Skywalker, Poe Dameron, Leia Organa, Padme Amidala, Avar Chris, like they all have this rhythm to them and this crispness, and they have this awareness of, you know, we don't want to make children wrestle with, you know, pronouncing Elon Slezbegano for the main character. So the main character names don't always fall into that, the trope of the jokes that we make about Star Wars names. How do you feel about main character names?
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, you talk about Poe Dameron. I think Poe Dameron's one of the great Star Wars names. Mm-hmm. And this is back when I was, you know, maybe making fun of Captain Phasma's name, and we had Finn and sounded great. And we had Rey, but we hadn't seen the film yet. We didn't know what's going on. And Poe Dameron, and we got a full name, right? It wasn't just Poe. Poe Dameron. I just remember thinking, okay, this is going to be good. They got it. They know what to do. And that's not a silly name. It's not Poe McFly Boy. It's Poe Dameron. And you talk about the musicality, downright percussive nature of Cal Kestis is that's a great Star Wars name.
It's a main character name.
Yes. Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. You're hitting the nail on the Kestis of like a lot of things. It rises above the jokes. The jokes are what, you know, gets remembered. An occasional name will pop up, it might be on your list, but like there's some names where you're like, yep, that's a fun, silly Star Wars name. We get it. But I just think it's not fair to what you talk about. I think it's important to have these real spacey, fantasy, pulpy hero names. And it really works. Like, quite frankly, like Luke Skywalker is absolutely musical, but it's almost too long, right?
It's almost too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. Poe Dameron is like, that's perfection. Like sometimes we talk about how you can't, you know, capture lightning in a bottle again. Like sometimes the first film or first anything is like, nothing's ever going to be exactly the same. Poe Dameron's like lightning in a bottle. Like they did it again.
Yeah.
It's a perfect main character name. I feel like maybe one of the creators has talked about this. Maybe J.J. Abrams. I also feel like main character names have to be like a 6-year-old can dress up with for them is Halloween and loudly, proudly pronounce who they are. I'm Poe Dameron.
Yeah.
I'm Padme Amidala. Maybe Padme Amidala is a little bit more work, but you know, that there's a power to keeping them a little bit more. I'm Cal Kestis, you know, yeah. I'm Avar Chris. Yeah. I'm Elzar Man a little bit more. No, I don't know if 5-year-olds are pretending to be Elzar Man, but a fella can dream. That to me is the power of them as well.
I agree.
And then you get into me, the next category before you even get to the Donk Bonkle Goods or whatever I said is the villain names.
Yes.
And I think the villain names have a long history of beating you over the head with a gaffy stick. Yeah. But they sound cool, pulpy, and dangerous. My brother and I used to sit around and talk about that. One of the things that's great about Star Wars is that Darth Vader and Boba Fett sounded cool and scary, and how did George Lucas do that? How did he make two names that sound that cool? As an adult, Boba, you know, now it's the drink and everything, but Vader and Fett, that to me, those are the kind of the villain starting point names, and then they get, you know, a little bit larger, a little bit more obvious maybe with Darth Sidious, but they always keep that, like, I don't think they're trying to be like, take us deadly serious. Obviously the characters are serious, the stories are serious, but the names are meant to be pulpy. They are of that tradition. You know, Cad Bane, that's a damn cool name, but it's pulpy. Captain Phasma is literally straight out of the pulps, as we've talked about. So I feel like the villain names are almost their own category as well.
I really think it is that vaudevillian style, right? Like Darth Vader comes on stage and the organ plays some music, you know, bum, bum,
yeah.
Bum. I really think it does have to capture the vibe. And you're right, they're cool. Kylo Ren is just the coolest of the cool for me. I love that name. But I also like Hux, you know, that works for me too. And Armitage Hux still works. I get the picture of who he is by hearing that name. And I've definitely come around on Phasma. Embracing what it means, and JJ of course later on explained where he kind of pulled it from and everything too, but yeah, it should kind of not make you smirk like the Phasma name did for me, but like, yeah, you're like, I get it. And you make like Darth Tyrannus, Darth Sidious, sure. I think if you want to have some fun with it, that's part of celebrating Star Wars, but I wouldn't want it any other way. What would you want your villain to be? Darth, you know, McGoogle? Like, it doesn't I don't want to throw a Mick in front of every name today, but you know what I mean? Like, you want it to be Darth Tyrannus. That's fun to say on a playground.
Yeah, and it is. It's just playing fair about what this is. And there's always that tension in Star Wars where it means all sorts of different things to us, and it has other elements that aren't pulp, but it's never too far from pulp. And that is a reminder. And I think, to me, it's one of the things that I love about Star Wars is it's kind of ridiculous that his name is Darth Tyrannus. It's like so on the nose, and yet it's this complicated character full of ideas and lessons, and I just love that it can be both. It can just be both.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about, like, you know Darth Vader, you grow up with that, like, and I don't care what generation you are, you're a Star Wars fan and you know it, and then the new name comes along and it seems silly, but I think you're not taking into account how silly Darth Vader is, but also how cool it is and how just it stands the test of time. It's that thing of, you know, I mean, gosh, I used to make fun of Count Dooku. Like, that was one of the reasons I hated the prequel, quote unquote, until I found out a little bit of what it meant. And also just, you say it enough and like, no, it feels good when you say Count Dooku. Like, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I didn't love when it first popped out.
Yeah, no, and then there's obviously the Dracula connection with Christopher Lee's famous Hammer horror role. But I love your point about almost thinking of them like stage names, like vaudeville or British panto, where you want to have no doubt that they're a baddie when they walk on stage, and to have names that sound that way. The way Yoda says Dooku, it's almost like egging the audience on to boo. I love that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, you know, you get to the one of the most poked fun at, understandably, Star Wars names. I think it's beautifully ridiculous, but Savage Opress, Okay, just there. It's not. You know,
yeah.
Letters and sounds that are kind of nasty, like Vader and Fett. It's just those are two bad words, except for one is pronounced like you're pretending you know French when you don't. But again, to me, it's like, okay, we want no doubt of what this character symbolizes. And then the actual story is so sad and so pathetic. He gets nothing out of being savage or oppressing people. And I love it.
Well, I think that's part of the part of the power of, like, of just looking at that name. Yeah, it's I'd say silly. Like, it's not one of my favorite names, but I don't stop and think about it anymore. It's Savage Opress because of his story, because of the character behind the name. And when a character, when a name gets a chance to tell its story, so to speak, I think some of that, some of the smirking is definitely removed, at least for me.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then for me, after, so you get the main character names, you got the villain names, and then you get into what I'm going to big lump background weirdos.
Yeah.
And I think this is the main genre that people poke fun at. I think maybe even throw a sidekick in there. Like, Chewbacca is right on the edge of, like, we're so used to it, but I'm sure, especially for like adults in 1977, like, well, I'm supposed to take this seriously, this dog named Chewbacca. But I think we're much more used to that now, so it doesn't play as bonkers. This is the one where I think is the part that Star Wars just celebrates being wild and fun, having a sense of play, having a sense of why not. I think this is the Ilan Sleaze Begano, the Mm-hmm. Corn frita, named after the way one of Lucas's children said corn fritters, Hermiodel after hear me yodel. Or, you know, I think this is where, especially in the expanded universe, you know, writers went real crazy with apostrophes. And that used to be the joke of like just a bunch of vowels and consonants thrown together with an apostrophe here and there. I think this is the main category that people think of as Star Wars names and poke fun at. What do you feel about that category?
And some of my favorite names, some we might discuss here today. But yeah, I really agree with that. I think that becomes the headline, and I don't think that's a bad thing. It's a fun thing. But yeah, and the apostrophe, and you and I have made jokes to put the apostrophe there. I am Kaken. You know, it's part of the fun. But yeah, I love what you've done here, breaking down the categories of Star Wars names, and this is perhaps most memorable for good reasons. This is where the weirdos come to live in Star Wars.
Yeah. And I say knock yourself out of, they aren't the main thing characters. They aren't always like holding up the actual lesson or theme or myth. This is a big, wild, weird galaxy. And part of the fun of going there is it's bonkers. Mm. And I think that's why these names are, you know, weird like that. Here's my last category, Ken. Thank you for indulging me. I think we're also dealing with it's always been there, but I think it's increasing more and more with the vast number of television series, books, comic books. I think there's also like a kind of catch-all name. They're not as far background or as weird as like, now we're having fun, we're making a joke. It's Hermiodel. But characters who are not necessarily the main character, but they're a little bit more grounded, a little bit more earthy. We don't necessarily want to have them be kind of a joke or a punchline anyway. I'm thinking of like the Trace and Rafa Martez, Vel Sartha, Pen Pershing. They all still sound a little alien, but are a little bit more names that you would encounter in Star Trek or other science fiction, because they still got a space fantasy flair, but they're like, they're grounded, earthy characters that we don't want to poke fun at. They're not a background weirdo. They're not the main character. They're a supporting character representing something kind of real and important.
I like that breakdown. Yeah. It's not necessarily a new category, but to your point, it's highlighted more because of the amount of content we have now. So yeah, or amount of shows. I love that.
Yeah. Kind of expanded category.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that answers some of Ben's questions, but he's got some other specific ones. So let's talk some favorite names and maybe even some surprise ones. So what do you got there, Ken?
Well, I got to tell you, Ben, this is one of those ones. I read the question. I went to sip my coffee, went, oh, easy. God, I spent my whole life loving Star Wars names. And then I drew a big blank.
It's too much, right?
Too much. I don't remember any Star Wars names. So I was like, you know, screw it. Let me look it up. Let me jog my memory here. And that helped get some different answers than I think I would have just answered if I'd gone with my memory. So here's some of my favorites. I was going to say this too. Obscure is a relative term around here, right? This is, you know, obscure is to my mom. Yes. You know, Chewbacca might be obscure to my mom. So here's what I went with. This was a impulse, gut reaction, first instinct. Rats Tyrell. I just love that name. And this list could be nothing but pod racers.
Oh, yeah.
The pod race names are some of my favorite in Star Wars. But just rats. And it's the sad tale of rats. And the fact that his name is Rats. And that's just a great race name. But also, oh, rats. What a sad story. But Tyrell, spelled with an E and two L's, and just kind of drawn out in a spacey way. I start my list with there. We're not gonna do a full Star Wars rank here, pitch it back and forth, but that's where I went with my list first.
That's a great one. You know, yeah, there's the classics, like, you know, hey, Luke Skywalker's pretty good. I suspected we would both wax philosophical about Poe Dameron, which is just damn, that's a great name. On the absurd side, from more expanded canon, I do love Itchy becoming at a chit cuck.
Yes.
The word that makes me feel dirty every time I say it. This is a deep cut maybe to some people, but probably not anybody listening to this podcast. But I really do like Tara Sanube. I think it's got a great rhythm to it. It's fun to say, and it has a sense of of wisdom to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Jedi names could be a whole other category. Sometimes they fall into background weirdos of overly complicated or jokey names, but a lot of times they're not main character, but they're a little bit more straightforward. Also in that category, he's one of my favorite characters, but he's also just got a great, could be a main character name from the High Republic, is Reeth Sylas. I love that. I wouldn't mind being named Reeth Sylas.
Great name. Awesome. Yeah. That sounds like a great baseball player name too. Guy, you mentioned the Jedi one, like Ki-Adi Mundi is a great name. I think there's a lot of debate around Ki-Adi Mundi and what he says and does, but I think that's a great name. And I think between him and Qui-Gon, there suddenly came the idea that every Jedi name had to have like a dash in it there. That's not true. It's not true, but they, so a couple others on my list here. And this was, my memory's jogged, not from a list I looked at, but I've been slowly kind of rewatching Rebels, getting back on that. I just love this name. Ryder Azadi.
Oh, yeah.
Is such a, and you hear that name, and we're going to have a discussion about a name that, you know, names might be, you think they're good or think they're bad. Ryder Azadi is just, it's a name of action. It's a name of forward motion and momentum to take on the Empire. And I absolutely love that name.
Yeah, I feel like when I heard Ryder Azadi, I was like, is there going to be a folk song about that name? That's a folk song name. Let me tell you the tale of Ryder Azadi.
Ryder Azadi went into town. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the spread, we could do an 8-hour podcast just about the spread of Jedi names in the prequels, because
yes,
you have Mace Windu, who to me is it's a little bit more space fantasy, but it's still up there with sort of main character name. Simple, punchy, cool. And then you got a little fun alien like Ki-Adi Mundi. But then you got full bonkers background weirdo by the time you get to Kit Fisto of like, who was drinking what at 2 a.m. when this person became Kit Fisto, you know?
Or just George walked in the office one day and went, that guy's name's Kit Fisto. Okay, George.
Kit Fisto is totally just ripped out of Flash Gordon, you know, cereal. Yeah, love that. Ryder Azadi is great. A couple more from me. Maybe this is on your list. But a smaller character name from the original trilogy that eventually got a first name, and it just pops in my mind of like, that's also cool enough to be a main character name. Crix Maydeen.
Oh yeah, good old Crix.
Right. That is such a cool name. I mean, he also feels like I want to sing a song about Crix Maydeen. Tell a tall tale of Ryder Azadi and Crix Maydeen.
Love that one.
Not obscure and definitely in the villain mold, and to Ben's great question about, can you tell the difference between a good character name and a bad character name? Asajj Ventress is, it's close to, being super on the nose like the Savage Opress, but it's not quite there in the ending. It is just so, vent. Is close to just like cut, wound, lacerate, and then having obviously the stereotypical feminization of it with Rest. It's pretty on the nose, and yet it's just so damn cool.
Yeah, and just kind of it both rolls out of your mouth and off your tongue, but also it flies out of there with a bit of anger.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it's one of the great, also, like, let's have fun with the spelling of, the double J, Asajj Ventress. Oh,
I have to look it up often. my brain jumbles those letters around sometimes. I have to be like, wait, where do the J's go? Yeah.
Where do the J's go? No apostrophes, just a double J. I have one more, but I want to know if you have more.
Yes, I do. Recent one, I'm a fan of the character. I've talked about it before, but I think this is a great Star Wars name. Zori Bliss.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about action, a name with energy to it. The bliss is confusing. Is this happiness? What is this? What's this bliss mean? And you couldn't really tell which way the character was going. I think a lot of that had to do with the design that we had seen going into the film. I love that name. In the same vein, going back to the original trilogy, and this is a character, I didn't learn until later when we all learned these names, post 1983, Zev Zaneska. And I think if you're looking for, hey, what are the rebel pilots behind Luke? You know, Biggs Darklighter, great name, classic Star Wars kind of name. Even though what's a dark letter, I don't know, but it just sounds right. Zev Seneska, like that guy's flying for the rebellion.
Oh yeah, and there's somebody invented a cocktail in 1923 called the Zev Seneska, right?
Yeah,
so good.
And then two more on this list. One of my all-time favorites that I think I used to use as evidence that the prequels weren't good, but now I would yell at myself because it's evidence that the prequels are great and fantastic. It's Poggle the Lesser.
Oh, like, fantastic. Great pull.
He's clicking and clacking and got the Death Star plants. Who is this guy? It's Poggle the Lesser. What? What is it? It's such a name with the story and a tip of the iceberg storytelling going on mm-hmm. with that name about the Geonosian culture and like who he is. Like, I love that name. And turned around on that one fast once I thought about it.
That's such a great pick. I love breaking things up and suggesting different cultures, you know, mm-hmm. that this leader and, you know, he's maybe the political leader, the mm-hmm. queens are the real leaders, it would seem. But then why is he called the Lesser? And that, like, that just great thought starter. Mm-hmm. You're making me think of prequels names. The other one that I want to throw out is kind of a great name is Rick Olier. Which I want to be sure to talk about this because we haven't talked about it as much of, like, even though these names are so many of them are fantasy and mm-hmm. mythic, there is that one foot in the real world too of like Luke, Han, Leia, those are real human names, right? Mm-hmm. From the get-go, real human names. And the power of Star Wars names by just throwing on something a little bit different, Rick mm-hmm. Olier is a Star Wars name.
Yeah.
But it's real funny to imagine somebody in Star Wars just turn around and going, hey, Rick.
Yes.
And yet it works.
Yes. What's the High Republic Jedi? Douglas?
Jedi Master Douglas. Yeah. Master. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Douglas Sunvale, I think. Mm-hmm. I'll look it up. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, that's a great one. And you have one more?
Yeah, my final one. And it kind of goes to what you're saying about, hey, as we get more stories and streaming shows and comics and everything. And I think this, you hear this name and it's so kind of normal, but then you think about it for a second. You're like, number one, that's a Star Wars name. And two, it tells me so much I need to know about the character. And it is Cyril Karn.
You
hear that name and you know, I think we have uptight, tightly wound, ready to explode, problematic bad guy. Who enjoys cereal. The cereal and the cereal of it all, I don't know how connected those are. I haven't looked at that story. But Cyril Karn. It looks like that sounds like a guy you worked with at Kinko's.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah, my shoulders go a little bit higher when I hear the name Cyril Karn. Parts of my body tighten up.
Yep. Like, when Cyril worked? He works Friday. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, we can't give this project to Cyril because he's gonna get really uptight about it. So he can't hide that job from Cyril Karn.
Yeah. 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 It's just just one of those names that, you know, this isn't right, but he might have got picked on at school for being named Cyril, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's more for maybe why he has so much anger towards cereal, apparently. I wanted to highlight that because I just think that's a great Star Wars name.
And there's something about Karn that sounds like it is the name of a cereal. Maybe this is where it's all going. He ends up inventing a cereal and they're called Karn. That's a great, great one because Andor has got a really great, since Andor is trying to be a little bit, you know, more grounded and it's not going to have long sleeves Beganos are not going to pop up in Andor. That's fascinating to study those names. Cassian Andor, by the way, is up there with Poe Dameron of damn, they did it again.
Oh, I 100% agree with that. Oh, yeah. 100% agree with that. Yeah.
Cassian's so cool. But here's my actual final one. This is from a book. It's one I used to go on about all the time because, as we talked about, a lot of variety in Star Wars names, but this one felt like this is going back to the beginning. And that is Claudia Gray's character, Joff C. Stryker.
Just the best.
Just so powerful. And for a long time, I was calling him a one-syllable noun-verber because that's the formula. Luke Skywalker, Joff C. Stryker. So great.
I kind of figured you'd talk about Joff, but I'm so glad you did because I think that's a great example of everyone thinks that's how Star Wars names are. But really, like we discussed, not so much. But when it does show up, it's beautiful. And Jacques Sea Strikers is just a wonderful name.
Yeah, kind of rare. There's not as many Sea Strikers and Dark Gliders as I might even like. Yeah. Well, I think we've tackled most of Ben's questions, except for this one really great one about, was there a character we were ever wrong about that we made a guess based on their name and we were wrong? Do you have any stories of that?
I do. I was trying to think back to just marketing and it'd be mostly modern era Star Wars, where you're like, we had so much time to speculate, and that was the cottage industry that, you know, grew up around all this stuff that exploded out here. So I have two Solo names. Mm. And one is a name you heard and you're like, oh, that's definitely a bad guy. But we don't really have the answer. There's more storytelling. And that is Therm Scissorpunch, who stole the show at that Denny's press event. Trading card came out with a name. And again, like Joff Sea Striker, oh, that's right. This is what Star Wars names are. Again, not true, but Therm Scissorpunch. I am glad about his place in the movie, right? That we didn't have like a heartfelt scene with Han go, Therm, I need to get out of here. Well, of course you do, Han. Like, I'm glad we didn't have that. But I do need more Therm Scissorpunch, perhaps not in maybe a Solo 2, but maybe an animated project. He needs to show up in Bad Batch.
Oh, yes. Or he could be alive during the High Republic. Why not?
So there's one.
That's great.
Yeah. And then the other one, talk about Solo marketing as well. A character that it worked on me because I was like, that is a damn great Star Wars name. It is a villain name to the core, and I'm in on it. And then you come to find out not so much. And that's the character of Infus Nest. That is at the time, and with the design, which I've talked about, which I just love that design. So many people love Infus. But yeah, it was set up. I in a way fell for the marketing, right? Oh, here's one of the adversaries, Infus Nest. Ooh, bounty hunter, scoundrel, scum. Ooh, and then to get the reveal, and that's what I think it worked. When the mask comes off and it's Aaron Kellerman there, I did the kind of an audible like, oh, awesome, like, and I think that has a lot to do with the name going into the movie.
I think you're right. I think that is one that goes back to the great villain traditions of Boba Fett or Bossk or Dengar, of just like, it's just the sounds are close enough to ones that at least, you know, from our cultural perspective, we associate it almost sounds like a snake noise, right? Of Infus Nest. It's somehow like slinky and also nasty. It's a name that sounds like it is going to pop up behind you and snap your neck.
It sounds like a character that Cobra Commander was like, here's my cousin, Infus Nest. Yes.
And yet it's not as on the nose, right? Yep. It isn't like, you know, Axe dead now. Axe Wolves is, Axe Wolves, actually, that was a good one because we were debating his allegiance ultimately toward the end of Mandalorian season 3, and it does sound like a sneaky name. Infus Nest is, I think, the closest I've been to, like, I just didn't question it. I didn't think it was a question of the movie. I thought it was, that's a cool bounty hunter name for a cool bounty hunter character who's going to be a foil. It was a name that tricked me because I didn't think the movie would pivot on that character's identity in the way that it did. Yeah. The one that made me hopeful was Reva. I felt like it was really interesting that they led with her name. I think if they had just led with Third Sister, I would have thought like, this is going to be a foil. This is going to be an obstacle. When they gave her the name Reva, when we don't normally get to hear, you know, Inquisitor's actual names, that gave me so much hope of like, this could be a happy moment in this potentially sad tale or bittersweet tale. This could be a victory that Reva could be a character who reconnects with her humanity. So that was a name that almost tipped it for me the other way.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Final thing I'll say, Ken, your talk of Solo reminded me of one of my other favorite names of and I think it's, I don't know if it pops up anywhere but the visual dictionary. Maybe it's in the novelization. I don't remember. But the man who gives Solo his last name, Drawd Munbrin. It just sounds like the driest muffin you ever ate, of a dry muffin as a human being. And just a boring, officious name, right?
Yep, that's perfect. It's one of the things you and I love about that scene. Just another day in the empire for this guy. And it's a life-changing moment for Han, so works for me. Love that.
Yeah, who gave Han Solo his name? Drawd Munbrin.
Yeah, you're chewing on a muffin, like you said, that's been there on the shelf for a day.
Yeah, well, we took a real long time with that question, but it just really fired my imagination to talk about things that we haven't spent as much time on. So thank you, Ben, for the great, hey, that was a full episode onto itself. We will move on to next question from Justin Jacobson, a patron on Patreon. Thank you, Justin. Here's what Justin has to say. Oh, there, Ken and Joseph. I have a question about the connection between Star Wars and Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. Both have stories about seeking powerful relics to keep them out of the wrong hands. Luke Skywalker has done this with the help of his droid C-3PO and R2-D2. Dr. Aphra has done this with their murderous counterparts 000 and BT-1. Indiana Jones has done it in a room with an astromech and protocol droid in the hieroglyphs on the wall and found proof that these relics come from other planets. If that counts as proof of a shared universe, which pair of droids do you think was depicted? And what were they doing here? Trying to save Earth from relics that can melt faces, or stirring up mayhem by handing out Sith relics like free samples at the mall? This is a great question. I know people love 000 and BT-1, the dark counterparts to 3PO and R2-D2. How do you feel about this Star Wars Indiana Jones connection? Obviously, it's a long-standing thing to have these sort of nods to other fictional universes. And a lot of fans like this concept that they are actually all connected, and this is evidence that it's all connected. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great to have fun with that, as Justin is, as opposed to, you know, I'm sure there's some folks who throw them out there as Easter eggs, as facts, but it's a fun in-house nod too, being in like Lucasfilm, winking at Lucasfilm, even up to Andor with what sand car stones are there, right?
A lot of stuff. In the whip and carbon frozen whip, right?
Right. So it's always been something I enjoy. We talked about Club Obi-Wan and our Temple of Doom discussion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love it. I think it also, it's not directly Lucasfilm, but it's friends talking about friends. I definitely think I can have a lot of fun thinking about E.T. being a Jedi lost, lands on Earth. And that's why I recognize it's Yoda. And of course, we know that the species shows up in Phantom Menace. So yeah, a lot of fun to have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree too. I think for me, I really like Star Wars happened, you know, far away a long time ago. I'm fine with the idea that the species, the ET species, lived billions, trillions of years. And that was the ET, trillionth descendant of the ones whooping up in the Senate in Phantom Menace is the one. That
vote
had
now.
You know,
vote now.
Exactly. Phone in your vote. Phone in your vote. Vote from home. So I like that idea. I like it it's not even so much about did they come from space. It's more like, but this happened a long time ago. That's a part of Star Wars that I treasure.
Yeah. Same.
So let's get into Justin's actual question. If these are, in Indiana Jones, markings of an astromech droid and a protocol droid, which pair is being celebrated and why?
Yeah. Taking, of course, the fact that 000 and BT weren't around in anyone's minds when the movies were made. Let's go into the actual story of it. I still stand by the idea that it is 3PO and R2. Theory-wise, going into some strange conspiracy theory waters there, perhaps R2 had some plans for pyramids in the wall. I don't subscribe to that theory in real life, but I think it's more complicated than that, and more direct. But here's my pitch to you, Joseph. I think Luke Skywalker, post-Return of the Jedi, and maybe this will be covered in Filoni's movie, sent them out into the galaxy to scout for a possible Jedi temple based on maybe something he was feeling, some kind of information he found. And the travel, it took so long that they go ahead to our galaxy or our time and that they had been there in that area there near the Well of Souls and all that stuff during that time or before thousands. It could be thousands of years before Indy's time, of course. And that the locals hung out with them. And that's why they're on there. And that we don't know if it's a Jedi temple. Maybe they reported back to Luke with that information.
I think they landed in a desert part of Earth. Three was like, bleep this.
Yeah. 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 Not again. Yeah.
They're out. Like, are we just on Tatooine again? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the idea that it is 3PO and R2 being celebrated, because I feel like if it was 000 and BT1, the carvings would have more of a sense of warning.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Stay away. Dangerous. Dangerous. I like the headcanon that they didn't actually make it to Earth, but the legends of them did.
Mm.
That there's this untraceable legend of these mechanical men known only as 3 and 2. And it is, you know, whispered they traveled in the stars with a powerful, heroic wizard. And we don't really know much about them other than this silhouette. Or, you know, maybe it's even that, you know, soothsayers saw them in visions and right. carved them into the walls and scrawled them into ancient texts. And I love like this idea that there are these kind of revered, unknown figures, and 3PO would be so happy that there are drawings of him. And
yeah.
People are trying to translate him.
Curious. Curious indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So that's my thought, in which I'm excited to watch. We just watched all the Indiana Jones movies to discuss them, but I'm excited to watch them again just for joy. And I'm going to get extra joy out of all of the little nods.
Yeah. Love those nods indeed.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with one more question and a power of the light side back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to try to ace some more cues. We've got a cue from Twitter from Daniel Mormack. This is a really fun one. Here's what Daniel has to say, Ken. One of my favorite things about Mando has been his awesome weapons. We see him first with his pistol, an iconic Western-style gunslinger, also his pulse rifle. As he goes into Season 2, we see him collect the Beskar spear and the Darksaber and lose the pulse rifle. In Book of Boba Fett, we see him lose the Beskar spear. And in Season 3, we see him lose the Darksaber. And now his blaster pistol? Upon a rewatch, he appears to pick up two bigger pistols. Are these his new cool weapon? I also cannot tell, did he loot crate them on Mandalore, or were they the stormtroopers? What else is next for him in terms of a cool weapon? Love this question, because it's just kind of going through Mando's up and down tragic relationship with weapons. And I have to say, I did not have time to rewatch those final episodes of Mandalorian Season 3 and trace what I think is happening with the weapons of his his IB-94 gunslinger pistol is lost forever. If the other two that he's wielding, if he took them off of Gideon's troopers, or if he had them packed as backups, I didn't have time to go through and, you know, Zapruder film it to try to figure that one out. I also kind of feel like, of all the things that the Mandalorian does well, accurate tracking of Mando's weapons is not high up for me. So I also feel like we could just pick up in Season 4 and he's got the IB-94 back.
Yeah. Or the pulse rifle, which a documentary needs to be made about what happened to the pulse rifle for me.
Yeah, because that's the thing in Season 1 where it disappears on that mission in Tatooine, where it seemed like it would have been really helpful when Fennec was sniping at him to have. And then gets pretty definitively, I think, destroyed with the Razor Crest. But it is like, Mando, where's your pulse rifle for parts of Season 1?
Yeah, totally.
I'm curious how you feel, Ken. We will answer the direct question about, you know, what might his cool new weapons be, but how do you feel that is a part of his story? Is that weapons, as he says, are part of his culture, part of his religion, and yet he does go through them. He has them and he loses them, and sometimes it's hard to track, and sometimes it's a big meaningful moment. How do you feel about his relationship with weapons?
I love what you're saying here, and thought I had as well. It's like, I don't know how explicit it is. Like, it's one of those things, like, you and I love celebrating themes, and sometimes I think they're very intentional. Other times they just kind of emerge because it's the story, and this to me might be one that's the story. Who knows? Maybe Favreau will be like, ha-ha, gotcha, all along. Our goal was to have him lose weapons as he goes along the way. but it's working because it's there. It's happening. Daniel's question here, it's almost depressing, right, about this poor guy just loses everything he gets and things that he attaches to his identity. So I think there is a lesson there. You have it, and I kind of like it. I almost wouldn't want them to be too aware of it. You know, I just want it to keep kind of happening in the background.
Yeah. I like that. It's like the pulse rifle worker saying just disappears. And I have Zapruder filmed that. I was so I don't know why I'm obsessed on that detail, and sometimes I let things go, but he puts it on the cart at the end of Sanctuary.
Yeah.
And then it's just anyway. Yeah. But then there are the weapons that are meaningful. The Beskar spear he's kind of shamed for, that Beskar shouldn't be, you know, forged into a weapon, and it's the spear that becomes Grogu's armor, right?
Yeah.
The chain link. And then the Darksaber is this weapon that was never a match for him, that he didn't want, that was foisted on him. So those two things, and the fact that he finds the Beskar spear, kind of happens into it by Ahsoka gifting it to him.
he stumbles into the, he's going through a lot of loss in season two, but then the thing that he needs finds him.
Yeah.
In the Beskar spear is interesting. So it does almost feel to me like these are story beats that are like, that they're practical. Like, we need him to fight Gideon, and he needs something to fight with. Then this Beskar spear emerges. The Darksaber emerges as a part of the story of what Mandalore is going to be and Din's relationship to it. So I don't necessarily feel like it was super intentional, but a theme does emerge of this man who has a strong relationship to violence. Mm-hmm. Weapons are a part of who he is, but he's on this search and this journey to find the right weapon for who he is as he changes.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea.
Yeah. So
works for me.
I also wonder if it is a point of shame. Like, yeah, when he's hanging out with other Mandos and they're comparing weapons, and he's like, yeah, I had this, but I lost that. And then, yeah, I had this, but I lost that. And are they really like, you need like those mittens that kids have in cold climates where they're tied to your wrist. Tie your weapon to your wrist, dude.
Yeah. 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 Tie your phone to your wrist. Put a chain, necklace on. I love that. No, and again, going to the thing here, you know, how intentional? I don't know. I don't even need to find out. It just kind of works for me, and it's part of his ongoing journey, as was losing the Razor Crest itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you want for his future? Do you want him to have like a new cool weapon when we rejoin him in season four, or what, where you go with that?
Yeah. Where I go with it is when I think of, this goes to Boba Fett, and this goes to growing up with Boba Fett as the only example of these Mandalorian super warriors from the past. I want him to have very specific reusable wrist weapon. And I know he's got the little birds there. I know he's got that, the whistling birds. I know that, then, which are, by the way, awesome. Yeah, and flames probably there as well, right? Yes, we know he has that. But I'm talking like a blast, like something almost new, like almost to your point. I keep losing blasters. Guess what? I'm strapping it to my wrist, like a wrist blaster of some kind, because that is the Mando way to be, right? Just, again, going back to 1984, if you were to think, what kind of cool weapon? I'd want it on the armor. So I'd go there. And then side weapon, I'm trying to think there's been an example of it, even with him or other Mandos, but vibro throwing dart blades, like, you know, or almost like ninja stars. I was talking about this with our mutual pal Joe Starr about how for a lot of us in our age bracket, I don't know if it was for other generations, but there was this weird thing in the mid-80s where we all wanted to be ninjas.
Yep.
Ninjas were just sold as the coolest thing. Maybe it came out of Karate Kid. I don't think so, but like
in comic books, a ton.
Comic, right? G.I. Joe, Storm Shadow, Snake Eyes. A lot of ninja characters showed up. And I mean, we're talking to the point where I went to the library to get books on how to, it was martial arts essentially, but I was learning how to walk on stone silently. Like, I was convinced in fourth grade I could be a ninja. And a ninja, you know?
Yeah. That's what was the new idea to me in the 80s. Yeah. It was probably my brother who told me about it. It's like, get this. They can kill you, but real quiet.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you're used to like John Wayne, like, you know, punching somebody and it echoes across the hills and gunfire. And like, just we were so used to big, loud American violence that the thought of like, you could be violent and silent at the same time? This is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Silent violence. Yeah, and so because of that, like a good throwing weapon is something I'd want from Mando to have as a backup there. And again, he may have different versions of it. Again, I haven't done the scrub through, like you said, as well. But that's where I'd want to go. So something strong on his wrist and something to throw.
Yeah. Oh, I love that, the idea of Mando, you know, throwing discs would be really cool.
Like, you know, in 1984, throwing stars were the coolest concept for a weapon. It was just, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Oh, that it was really cool. The comic books, you know, claimed they'd send you some, you know, in the ads. I wanted them. I do want him to have a new weapon. I kind of want him to keep the pistol. I'd love for him just to have that IB-94 back. I love the history of it being sort of inspired by Boba Fett's Sacros K-11. But I also feel like one of my favorite things about season three is that it ends with him kind of knowing that he's on a new path and that he wants a new path, that his goal now is to be Grogu's dad while Grogu sees the galaxy and grows up. And that in order to keep him and Grogu afloat and to teach Grogu responsibility, he needs a job. So he wants to be a bounty hunter for the New Republic, doing only morally approved Grogu friendly bounties. That's such a great and interesting setup. It's almost, you know, well, he is, you know, going to be a marshal kind of character. And the pistol goes great with being a marshal. But I wouldn't mind him having some sort of like a variation on like an electro staff, like different. I don't want him to just have, you know, what droids have had, what Magna Guards have, but something different. Maybe even something that's almost more like a baton, like, you know, it's clipped to his belt, but he whips it out and it extends. And, you know, maybe he can even, you know, fire a cool Mando dart from it.
Oh, now we're combining ideas. We've got a throwing dart that shoots out from his vibro stick. I love this.
His vibro stick. That's what, he needs a vibro stick, and then Lady Gaga can do a song about it.
I love that.
Any more Mando weapon thoughts?
No, here's the thing. It's truly a world of possibilities with him. This is who he is, and he can find a new version of that.
Yeah. So fun. Great question, Daniel. Thank you for sharing. And I can't wait to see the controversy of where those blasters come from. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll address it in the Disney Gallery episode of Mandalorian season three.
I want a half hour John at a dinner table explaining where the pulse rifle went.
Oh, yeah. Did he loan it out? What was the deal? Anyway, I need a comic book. Everybody makes fun of comic books explaining one little thing. I do need a comic book tracking the pulse rifle. All right, we are going to wrap up with a Power of the Light Side entry. If you're a newer listener and don't know what these things are, we ask our patrons on Patreon to share just something positive about Star Wars. It can be just a scene, it can be a moment, it can be music, and it can often be a long, thoughtful essay about their Star Wars journey, and that is what we have today. There's a real fun vibe here. When I first started posting a call for submissions, I'd say like maybe one or two paragraphs, and a couple of people were like, "I'm sorry, but I have a little bit more to say." And then other people saw that more other people had more to say, and now there's just a blatant like, "We know you said that, but no, we want to share more." And I joke about it. We welcome it. And I also want to let people know that this is a longer entry. So kick back, grab a drink of any kind, and enjoy this Power of the Light segment. Are you ready, Ken?
I am ready.
This comes to us from Chris Williamson. Chris says, "Hello, Joseph, Ken, Jennifer, and the Force Center family. I've been a longtime listener of Force Center, but only recently joined Patreon as part of your recent drive. I felt I needed to do something to support the work you all do outside of sharing Force Center with my friends by word of mouth and social media. For my Power of the Light Side, I just wanted to take some time to talk about what you all have meant for me as I have continually evolved as a Star Wars fan since I was first introduced to the galaxy far, far away in the late 80s. I know there are others like me, but I grew up in the dark times. The original trilogy had already been released, the toy lines were dried up, and there wasn't a Timothy Zahn in sight. I remember being introduced to Star Wars by my older cousin, whose father had bought him every Star Wars toy imaginable. I was 3 years old in 88 when I remember playing with his X-Wing and other action figures and ships, having no idea what I was playing with, but just being enthralled by the fun of it all. A couple of years later, he sat me down to watch Star Wars when my parents felt I was old enough to watch it. From then, I was hooked. My parents even bought me my first Star Wars VHS tapes, the Ewok movies, and then eventually my first Star Wars action figures for myself, the often coveted and discussed Bendem figures that Ken speaks so highly of."
Is highly the word? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think Chris is invoking some great comic irony. Yes, because the Bendems challenged me greatly of, please, if Star Wars is going to be back, can it be action figures? And you felt the same way, right, when you saw the Bendems?
100%.
Yeah. Well, It's great to know that Chris found joy in the Bendhams. Diving back into what Chris has to say. He had his Bendhams, and Chris says, I remember being in second grade when I got my first convert, a longtime childhood friend who I got hooked on Star Wars as well. We watched the movies constantly, read the novelizations, collected Power of the Force action figures and vehicles, and eventually created our own Star Wars fan club that we ran out of our basement discussing Star Wars, designing our own ships and speeders, and making up our own tales of what happened after Return of the Jedi, before we realized about the Heir to the Empire trilogy and other EU books. My fandom only grew with each re-release of the VHS tapes and eventually the special editions. Unfortunately, my fandom hit a dark period during the prequels. Being in high school is at a very impressionable age, and hearing from other friends and the general Star Wars public that the prequels sucked and were ruining Star Wars. I unfortunately went to the dark side and began becoming cynical about the fandom that was so pivotal to my youth. I would still go to see the films in theaters, but the joy wasn't there for me anymore, and I was genuinely sad that the thing I loved as a kid no longer brought me joy. I thought it was just a part of growing up. Jump ahead to the acquisition of Lucasfilm by Disney, and my excitement started to grow. Could Star Wars take a new direction under new leadership? I was hopeful. Lo and behold, the same dregs of fandom showed up after the film's releases, but I felt like I needed to push back. For the longest time, I felt like I was on an island, standing up for a movie franchise that I had only recently discovered was still a major part of my life and who I was. It was part of my identity, even if I didn't know it at the time. From when I was in high school until this time, I now had become a high school social studies teacher, seeing Star Wars in so much of what I taught in the lessons and messages I was hoping to convey. I had become the Star Wars teacher at my school. It is an identity I have fully embraced, with inspirational Star Wars quotes all around my classroom, with other memorabilia scattered within my classroom decor. It was around the time of The Last Jedi that I discovered Force Center. I was looking for podcasts for my drives to and from work and downloaded every possible Star Wars podcast I could find, but there was one I looked forward to the most. Truly need to thank you for helping me internalize how I was feeling about Star Wars and introducing me to a community of amazing people that can just express their joy for Star Wars while truly working to understand the themes and messages it is trying to share with the world. I felt like Han Solo at the end of the Force Awakens trailer. I was home. Thank you for working so hard to make such a positive space for Star Wars that I have seen make its way into other circles of the fandom. I try my best to use Star Wars to spread positive messages of identity, the choices we make, caring for others, and standing up for what is right and just. The same messages present in Star Wars are what I hope my students get from my classes. And Force Center helps recenter me on those rough days after school or mornings when I am overly tired. Thank you for helping me be a better Star Wars fan and in turn a more positive person in general. May the Force be with you all. May the Force be with you, Chris. This is really beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing this journey. Ken, what are your thoughts?
One of the things at the end is that this has all made you a more positive person. I think that's one of the things I focus on, where just engaging with stars on a deeper level has affected me and changed me and helped me grow even after all these years. And it's an ongoing journey. And your journey is one shared by many of Star Wars enters your life. It means something at a certain age. It changes, but maybe you don't. And so that's why you brush up against it a bit. And you know, you don't have to love everything about it. Let's be clear about that. I still know the prequels don't hit for a lot of folks for a lot of reasons, and they're not all bad, to be honest. But I love it. It's an ongoing journey. I think it's why we enjoy being part of this community with all of you here. And the fact that you're a teacher and that you're sharing Star Wars in that way. I want to go to a Star Wars teacher's class.
Yeah, me too. I think this whole journey is so relatable. I think we've all had our dark time. I think there's never a time where I didn't like Star Wars, but there was definitely a time where I only talked to people about it in a I'm having fun poking fun at it because I didn't feel safe to just be like, yeah, we're making all the jokes, but I really love it too.
Yep.
And I just spent 5 minutes riffing with you about how stormtroopers can't hit anything, but then I'm gonna go to Toys R Us and see if they have the snowtrooper action figure yet.
Yes,
you know, there's that time for me where it's like it was fine to make fun of, but you know, People didn't need to know you were excited. I was excited to get my driver's license because I could go to more Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful. It's really great to hear that people of all ages who start Star Wars, regardless where you start Star Wars, there's often a pull to a dark time and then an ability to sort of reclaim, like, no, this means a lot to me. It's both meaningful and fun. Mm-hmm. And being able to reclaim that is really wonderful. Other thing I just want to say is it's always very kind and very nice when people share nice words, not just about Star Wars, but about Force Center and the community. And I'm so glad that a community has grown up around us who want to be critical and thoughtful, but polite, and then also just joyful and celebrate it. And Chris, what you said about the podcast helping to recenter on rough days. The Force Center community does that for me. At times where I'm getting really grumpy and really cranky. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I remember messages like this, this one, and think, like, I know that's who I tried to be on the podcast and that's who I want to be. And I'm going to try to recenter to that positivity, because of hearing the reflection from the community. So thank you for that. You all help recenter me.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. I want to point as well. Like you discovered this, Chris, after Last Jedi, and that was an interesting time, to say the least. But I think in a way, I discovered Force Center after Last Jedi. It had been gone for a couple of years, but it was a fun extension of other things I was doing. And just kind of, it felt like a fun, yeah, again, fun part, but like a part mm-hmm. of me in this digital media space. And then Last Jedi rolls around and it wasn't just a safe spot to discuss it. It was like, I need to talk about it. I need to get a little shelter from the storm, and I need to share what I'm feeling because I'm feeling great things. And I want you all on the ride with me. I don't want to get held up on that should have been Akbar or no, this movie affected me. And that emerged for us, I think, after The Last Jedi in the community as well. So, Chris, very much you and so many others are part of that.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Chris. I really agree with you, Ken. Last Jedi was a turning point in lots of ways. It's really fun to hear when people started listening and why. Mm-hmm. So thank you for everything in this great message, Chris. If anybody is listening, if you're a patron and you want to submit a Power of the Light Side segment, just go to the post page, scroll down, find the picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi smiling at the Skywalker twins and get your entry in. Eventually, pretty soon here, I'll probably refresh the post so it's closer to the top and find a different picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi smiling. but that is it. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I do. We're on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We have that live Q&A coming up. Go subscribe to the channel so you won't miss it. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on a lot of spots, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly, as we said up top, at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Follow me at CatNapSock or go to my website, CatNapSock.com, for more things like my music show, Pop Rock and Radio, my ASMR channel, Sports Card ASMR, and a whole lot more. It's all there on the website. Joseph, you.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. I'm on Blue Sky right now. If you're getting into it, give it a try. I'm still on Twitter, Instagram. I'm having a lot of fun on Instagram, so you can find me there. My handle everywhere is at Joseph Scrimshaw. Having a ton of fun working on short films. Thank you, everyone who has supported, just with kind words, supported the recent Kickstarter for the short horror film I'm working on, and more news about those things coming soon. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Drawn Mundren, Kit Fisto, this has been Cues of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.